paddock to plate, fresh is best, straight from the farm gate. The trends around food in the last few years have been focused on supporting local, buying local, and just knowing where your food comes from. But will that continue? What is your morning tea, your lunch, your dinner, your brekkie look like in the future? Futurist Steve Sammartino is here to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning, Kaya.
You're making me hungry.
Of course I am. That's my job.
All right. How different might food look in the future?
Well, I think we're going to start to use technology to develop some of the foods that we love so much, but reduce the environmental impact and reduce the cruelty to animals. I hate to say it. Mm. And by the way, I'm not a vegetarian, but I think in the future, all the meat that we'll be eating will come from a lab. That sounds kind of disgusting. So guess what? They've changed the name. They now call it brood meat. Put it right here in the beer category.
Brood meat.
And it's already happening now.
Is it? Where? Tell me more.
Well, so we've already produced brood meats and lab burgers and so on. But KFC actually going into market in a place in Russia where you can buy nuggets which are bio-printed. So it's actual chicken. But no chicken died to make the nuggets. What they do is they take a little slither off the chicken, they put it in a gel and they bioprint it and grow it, grow it in a lab and eat a chicken. And look, for everything I know about chicken nuggets, I'm pretty sure no one will be able to know the difference.
Yeah, chicken nuggets is very different from, say, bacon
from a burger or
steak. Or,
exactly. Yeah, it is.
Sorry, go.
I was going to say this process, it's actually the exact same molecular structure. So it's not like a substitute like we've seen with these plant-based meat substitutes or patties. It's actual meat.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, if they also class, you know, that part of the, that section of the supermarket, the plant-based foods is slowly becoming more and more common in supermarkets and bigger, and they are all sorts of things that have been made from other things. Is that where we start? Would that be considered lab-made or not so much?
No, so those things are meat substitutes where we use legumes and various proteins to create meat-like flavours. Beetroot juice gives you that sort of juiciness and that blood feel when it cooks. But the future is actually goes somewhere beyond that where it actually becomes actual meat. So as far as they're called nature identicals, and we already have that with flavorings, you know, things like chocolate and vanilla, where what they do is they work out the exact chemical structure of, or the molecules that go into a flavor like vanilla or chocolate, and then they just recreate that in the lab.
Mm.
And so this is where we're heading with meat. And with bioprinting and 3D printing technology, what we can do is we can grow those out in special myogels, where it replicates the way meat is grown on an animal in the farm, out in the pasture. And the structure of it, even, you know, the fibers and the way they lay together and the state, we can make it exactly the same. And eventually we'll be able to print, you know, a lung or a heart of the exact same person if you need to have a transplant. It'd be your own heart, so there wouldn't be any rejection. So that's where the technology's heading. And in the future, look, I think that all the meat that we eat 30 years from now will come from a lab or a factory. I don't think we'll kill animals at all.
It can taste the same, but what about the nutritional benefit, which is why we're eating this food, right? To keep our bodies healthy and going and doing what it needs to do.
So that's the crazy bit, is that the nutritional benefits are exactly the same.
Wow.
Because it's the exact same molecular structure. So there's no difference. As far as your body's concerned, it's the same proteins which have been replicated in a different format to grow it, but it's the same. And you could even draw this analogy and say, well, we used to hunt bison in the field, but then we put them in the paddock. Are they still the same? Well, yeah, they are. And this is really just that natural evolution as we move forward and become more efficient with the resources and the technology that we have. We need to remember that agriculture itself, as we know it, breeding animals and herding animals and all of that, that's a technology. And so this is just part of the natural human evolutionary process. And every time we go to another step, what we're doing is we're just becoming more efficient with the resources that we use. And this is incredibly more efficient than farming animals.
We are a community here in the Hunter. We are a country that has very proud agricultural history, that has incredible farmers at the moment. What does all of this mean for them, do you see, Steve?
Oh, look, And again, like I say, this is quite a few years off before it gets to that scale. But I just think that in the long run, that's going to go the way of bison hunting. It really is. If we look at the long arc of history, as we find a better way to do something which is more profitable than the existing way, and it will be way cheaper to do this stuff at scale and brew meat and use lab techniques than it will be to grow animals. You know, it doesn't require the same amount of land. It doesn't require the amount of water. It's far more efficient, has a less environmental impact. It's very, very hard to see traditional agriculture competing. And if it is, it'll end up just being a niche market. I mean, my thought for the agricultural people who work in that industry, and I grew up on a farm myself, right?
Yeah.
So, is that we need to get involved in the industry, not look at it as an enemy, but look at it as an opportunity to move forward with where the technology is going.
10 minutes away from 10 o'clock, you're with Kaya Hanley on ABC Newcastle Mornings. You're hearing from your regular futurist, Steve Sammartino. We're talking the future of food. Is this expensive at the moment, Steve? I know you're saying it's being done, that fried chicken store in Russia is rolling out the questionable nuggets.
Questionable nuggets. I love that.
How expensive is it at the moment?
So let me take you on a history tour. In 2013, the first person to do it was a guy called Dr. Mark Post, and he made the world's first lab burger. It came in, a little bit above your average burger joint. $330,000 was what that cost. At the moment, it's around about $6,000 for a quarter pound of beef, if you want a steak.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, within the next 12 months, they think they'll be about $10 or $15 each. And this is a technology which has an exponential pattern. And so it'll come down, and look, within the next couple of years, beefs and these types of burger-style meats, the mashed-up meats, not the grown stuff that is exactly like a steak or a chicken parmigiana, but the more basic meats and processed meats, they'll be cost parity within a couple of years. And you're going to see that pop up in burger joints and all kinds of places.
All right, so that's meat. What about our three veg, Steve? Where is that coming from?
Yeah, well, I think that the vegetables will still continue to be grown. And the reason that I think that will happen is because vegetables are far more efficient in their use of energy and water than beef is. For example, it takes 15 kilos of food to grow 1 kilo of meat, which sounds crazy, but grains and vegetables and so on are far more efficient. They have a quicker growing cycle, and they can already be grown significantly in greenhouses and other areas. So I don't think that's going to change in the short term because it's already far more efficient in its use of energy from the sun and water, whereas beef is the one and other meats are the ones that have a massive environmental impact. So that's kind of where that'll head. And by the way, did you know that the Scientific American has said that livestock contributes more to greenhouse emissions than cars, trucks and planes combined?
Whenever we hear anything that's made in a lab, grown in a lab, there's always questions around safety, procedure. Is there still a lot to work out in the nuts and bolts behind the scenes to make sure that what's ending up on our shelves is good for us?
Yeah, look, there always is. And sometimes we think that things that we've produced in a factory or a lab are the same. And one of the problems with this, and it's the same with GMOs, is that we don't always know what the consequences are until many years later. So it's something that we've got to keep an eye on. But all indications are because this isn't produced because it's grown, it's probably going to be more safe than GMO modification or some of those factors. But look, there's people pushing against it. So in America, the Livestock Association have come and they're going to Congress to battle for anything that is lab-grown not to be called meat. They're saying, well, it's not meat and it's not beef because it wasn't grown from an animal. It wasn't from a live animal. So they're pushing for a delineation in what it's called as, I guess, you know, marketing defensive business play. So we're probably going to see some discussions about this as it becomes more common in the political arena and in the regulation arena. So that is going to be a really interesting part of it to watch.
How much of this sort of research into this investigation is happening in Australia right now, or are we looking overseas more to see what's going on?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's much of a discussion about it in Australia, and I think it should be because, you know, we're partly the food bowl of Asia-Pacific and China and so on. So I think that it's something that needs to get quickly on the radar because just like moving to renewable energy, we've been a coal exporter, we need to start thinking about the potential downside if a country like China says, well, we're going to move to lab meat because we can't grow agriculture like Australia can. Mm. And so that could have real export considerations. So it's something that we need to put on the agenda, understand, talk about the regulations, and either say, look, we're not going to go down that track, or invest in the technology so that we can participate. Because with technology, Kyra, as we've spoken about, we don't get a choice. It forges ahead, and if the economics support the new technology, then businesses and countries and consumers always move that way, especially when you won't be able to tell the difference with the substitute. Like, you'd be able to eat a Parmigiana and you just wouldn't even know whether or not that came from a chicken or whether that came from a lab. You won't be able to understand the difference. And so it's incumbent upon us to really put it on the agenda here in Australia.
I will be looking at my dinner plate a little bit differently tonight, Steve. Yeah, really interesting to have this conversation. Thank you. We'll catch up again soon.
Catch up, Kaya. Thanks so much.
Steve Sammartino, your regular guest and futurist here, talking about the future of your dinner plate, your brekkie plate, that lunch you pack to go to work, to send the kids to school, just what that might look like.